Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
UK Tech Weekly Podcast.
Hello, hello, hello. I am delighted and in many ways surprised to be welcoming you to the 73rd episode of the UK Tech Weekly Podcast. And sitting next to me, I've got three of the finest minds in UK-based weekly tech podcasting. Say, Henry Burrell.
Podcasting? No, keep going.
I'm not starting again.
I can cut you.
I mean, I am starting again. What?
I can cut you. It's fine.
Really?
Yeah.
Podcasting. I love that. This is going to be the theme.
We'll always have Harris. It's like Paris. We'll always have Harris. It's Miriam Harris, staff writer on Digital Arts.
Hello.
Hello. Roll out the Burrell, obviously. It's Henry Burrell.
Hello.
Senior staff writer and tech advisor of Macworld. And handle with Carey, it's Scott Carey.
Obviously.
Editor of Computer World. I didn't say my own name either. I'm David Price.
Hi. Hi, David. How are you?
Is right.
The Price is right. Deputy editor of Macworld. For your listening pleasure, for your absolutely shambolic listening pleasure today, apparently, we've got Amazon Goes Big, Zuckerberg Goes Virtual, and Harrison Ford Goes Back to the Future. Let's get started. Henry.
More editing for Henry.
Scott Carey, what has Facebook been up to lately, and what has it got to do with Puerto Rico?
Yeah, so there was a pretty sort of tone-deaf video that went up on Facebook earlier this week. I think it was earlier this week. Feels like it was a while ago, where Mark Zuckerberg and his head of social VR, Rachel Rubin Franklin, who used to work on The Sims. She's ex-Electronic Arts, which kind of makes sense when you see Facebook spaces because they're all quite sim-like sort of personas.
A bit like, I think they look a little bit more like the Miis from the Nintendo Wii.
Yes, they do. They look a lot like that, actually, because they've got the big heads.
Yeah. With no brains inside, as you'll find out.
Yeah, so they basically decided to post a video on Facebook showing off Facebook Spaces, which is their new social VR application for the Oculus, where you can sort of hang out with people in virtual spaces.
So you all see
in VR.
You all see a real place.
Yeah.
And you see each other's avatars, cartoonish, sim-like avatars.
Yeah.
And then you can all talk to each other, and that's how it works.
It's like a virtual chat room.
Okay.
So that's what Facebook Spaces is, and that's what they were trying to promote. But then things kind of got weird really quickly because they decided to they were having a chat on the roof terrace of their office in Menlo Park in California, and then they were like, let's go somewhere else. And where they decided to go was sort of disaster stricken Puerto Rico post hurricane. They basically, the next minute, you've got these two cartoonish avatars. Rachel's wearing like fake aviators. And they're like, and then the next minute, they're just standing in the streets. And what the actual, the environment they're in is a 360 video done by NPR of like the devastation that the hurricane sort of inflicted on Puerto Rico. And the next minute, this like video is sort of playing in the background. But Zuckerberg and Rubin Franklin are just sort of having a conversation, like in VR, over the top.
Like they're not aware of what's around them.
Well, they kind of are, but then
it's pretty bad.
But
they didn't care.
Yeah,
so they're just like, oh, we're standing in the street, and it really is flooded in real life.
Yeah,
and they're just sort of going. Oh.
And there's a horrible moment where You can tell that Zuck is like a little bit distracted because he's trying to do loads of things at once. So he's not quite aware of like what he's saying or what's going on behind him.
Like a real compassionate human.
Exactly.
Which he finds quite difficult.
So there's a horrendous moment where basically they're having a conversation about something and they're like, look how awesome it is that we can transport anywhere in the world and really experience new things. Let's do a high five. And they do a high five. But as they do the high five, the scene behind them switches to basically a completely flooded street.
And then he like showed off his dog. And yeah. It was weird. It was very weird.
So the idea was that they were meant to be showing off the fact that you can sort of hang out in real places so that they can do 360 video of a place like Puerto Rico and then you can hang out there. And then also the other thing that he really wanted to do was he wanted to talk about how they'd donated $1.5 million to the Red Cross and they developed this AI application with Red Cross where they were like mapping Puerto Rico so they could see which areas were most devastated. But he kind of just like rattled through all this content and then he kept bringing it back to like, how cool is it that we can just hang out in Puerto Rico while people are like trying to like wring water out of like flannels and they're like trying to like rebuild their homes.
Coming up next, Mark Zuckerberg live from the Mandalay Bay 32nd floor. Like they couldn't have like picked a stupider thing.
No, I mean that might have been
so
stupider.
Easy to think of all the other things they could have shown. It's in just the entire like actual world than doing that.
So my favourite piece on it was Olivia Salon, who works for The Guardian. She used to work for Wired. And she, I'm pretty sure she's the first person that referred to it as disaster tourism, which is exactly what it is. And that's what Zuckerberg was like. He was like, look how great it is that we can experience the devastation without actually leaving my lovely office in San Francisco.
That's horrible. But I do feel like I need to defend them a little bit.
Yeah.
In that you can see that they are trying to help.
Mm-hmm.
And they, as you said, they are juggling a lot of balls here.
Yeah.
They are, as I understand, they're also working to restore internet connectivity.
Yeah, using their balloony things.
Yeah, so they...
yeah, the balloony things.
So, I mean,
accurate.
You could argue that they're doing more to help than Donald Trump, for example.
Yeah.
But they're dealing with it, or he specifically is dealing with it, in his characteristic antisocial robot soulless way. That's what's gone wrong here, and it's sort of a sad thing that it's blown up in his face this much.
Yeah,
he's tried to do a good thing in a really hopelessly tone deaf way, and yes, he has sort of made the disaster all about him and his product.
Yeah,
but
I agree. It is the internet. You know, people resort to snark very quickly, I think the tone deaf of it. Tone deaf nature of it ended up becoming sort of a PR disaster, and he's apologized since. Actually, Zuckerberg came out and said, "I realize how this looked, I apologize. Basically, I wanted to promote the good work we were doing with the Red Cross, and I probably didn't do it in the right way." Which I think is to be commended, because you know that probably wasn't his intention, but it just sounds like it was maybe a rushed experience, or like something about it was basically they just hadn't really thought through the optics of it.
But it does further prove like billionaires' slow removal from reality.
Yeah,
because I mean he is doing a lot of things. He's quite philanthropic in that way. He sees himself as a bit of a Bill Gates who's like retiring and putting lots of money into good causes, but he just does it in such a strange way.
Yeah,
and sort of all the photo ops that we laugh at of him like trying to relate to the working class Americans.
Yeah.
As you say, presented very badly, even if he was doing it for a good cause.
There was another really horrible moment where they'd been hanging out in virtual Puerto Rico for about sort of 10 minutes.
Stop calling it that. VPR.
And they basically were like chuckling to each other, and then they were like, okay, should we go back to California now? And then they just like zip back to California, and it was like, guys, like this is
really
like, you really haven't thought this through.
It fits in with all that stuff about billionaires making futuristic bunkers and stuff, doesn't it?
The
idea of ever having to take consequences for the world that is deteriorating around them, in some cases related to their activities or their company's activities, it's just alien to them. They just think at any point they can be floated out of there and they'll be fine.
Yeah,
and it's all a bit disturbing. You mentioned photo ops. And I mentioned Donald Trump a second ago, who seems to get into every podcast. Do you think this is at all related to Zuckerberg's alleged presidential ambitions?
I'm not sure there's a link there, particularly. I mean, maybe everything he does now is potentially linked to that ambition that he says he doesn't have. But I really do think that his heart was possibly in the right place in the fact that he thought they were doing some good work with Red Cross and he wanted to find a way to promote it. But as you said earlier, unfortunately, the way he wanted to promote it was by also promoting one of his new products. And I think that's
the problem.
This
is the thing. Slightly ignorant here now. Is he promoting his own efforts to support the Red Cross, or was he trying to get other people to help? Because sometimes I just think if you have billions of dollars and you want to help a good cause, why do you even need anyone to know?
Yeah, it's a good point.
Yeah, like why do you have to take the credit for that? Is it just they just want a pat on the back, do they?
Yeah.
Like I know it's very definitely. It's yeah. great, but like if we can't for our paychecks, like why does he even have to let anyone know?
Yeah, I mean it's a double thing, isn't it? I think you've always got the reasonable justification that you are simultaneously giving the money and you're also saying, look, I've given the money, wouldn't you like to do the same thing? I'm getting this public acclaim for it. You could get it on a smaller level by giving your money. And
except nobody would, because we're not famous.
I know, but yeah. I'm very suspicious actually of his motives in this, because I do think it's related to the presidential thing. I think he's conscious that Donald Trump dropped the ball on it, and he wants to show, look at me. Mm. I can deal with, as he said, I can deal with real people, and I'm there helping, unlike Donald Trump. I'm the regular guy on the streets.
It's classic classic Silicon Valley, though, isn't it? It's like, I can do it, but I don't actually want to go to the not-so-nice place.
Mm. Well, yeah. I mean, at this point, I don't know how much it actually helps for a international celebrity to go there.
No.
It's not like they're going to be needed to shift sandbags, is it? They're just
But
be...
they could.
Well, yeah.
He could still do that.
Do you think he could still do that?
Yes.
I think his arms are still wasted away.
Beyonce had a good photo of, didn't she? Didn't Beyonce go down and help out?
Well, you can basketball shot sort of loo roll around, can't you? Which is...
Apparently Trump was throwing out loo rolls to the crowds and stuff. And then
that's what he was doing, but he was doing it like with a basketball like stroke, like yeah. where he was like shooting.
Apparently
like,
he like picked up like really heavy like jars and of like glass, and his the whole crowd had to tell him not to throw them.
I'm surprised he could pick them up, because I always imagine him being like Mr. Burns, where
it's
he like...
Give you the beating of your life.
Okay, moving on from Donald Trump, please. Is VR something that can ever be a tool for dealing with serious issues? I mean, Miriam, for example, do you deal with visual effects, special effects, this sort of thing? Can it approach a serious topic without making it into a cartoon?
Yeah, not in that way. Like, I've seen a lot of good work for therapy and like people who have come out of the military and that kind of thing, more like a mental way of helping. But I can't see any way how it could practically help an issue like a natural disaster. Definitely not. No. Yeah.
I remember there was The Guardian had a VR tool that was supposed to show you the inside of a solitary confinement.
So
you would experience it as that. And I've seen a few other tools like that. I think the idea of it is that it would give you empathy. And I think it's richly ironic that a tool that is designed for empathy has been dealt with in this utterly, unempathetic way.
I've done a thing like that where I went to the National Theatre and a filmmaker had made a VR film from inside the... one of the camps, one of the immigrant camps at
Calais.
Yeah. And that was designed for that. It was designed to give you empathy. And to be honest, experiencing it was really interesting, because you could sort of start to feel sort of the claustrophobia of it how horrendous the sort of conditions were. But there's nothing I can do from there. You know, it is disaster tourism. It is sort of...
Yeah,
I don't really know what the value is beyond that.
Yeah, unless they give you some way to reach out beyond watching that, which they never really do at this stage, then it's more just like promoting what they can do with their technology.
I do wonder about people as well that don't have the imagination to put themselves in that position anyway, that they need to have it in 1080p high definition around them before they can go, oh, hang on, maybe immigrants are
being
somewhat
empathetic.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, I don't know. All right, we're going to wrap this up. I've got a question that's very clever. Are you ready for this?
Yeah, very humble of you.
I know. I'm more humble. I was reading the Donald Trump thing. I'm more humble than you can probably understand. PR disaster.
Yeah.
Or PR disaster.
Well, But I think you know my answer, David. Yeah, PR disaster.
The thing is, it's a really clever question, but then it doesn't really work. So that's a problem.
Can I do what I always do and be like, which one's the good one?
PR disaster.
Yeah, I'll go with that one.
All right. Miriam?
PR disaster.
Yeah, that can it be rubbish. VR disaster?
Yeah, but they're both... Do you not get it? It's really clever.
Yeah, I get it.
VR well disaster done. Or PR disaster. No, but then they're both... Oh, I don't know. Anyway, forget that. After the break, we're going to talk about a new Kindle. Henry Burrell, I hear there's lots to ask about the new Kindle. Which is the biggest yet, incidentally. What's on the page, and does it make good reading for Amazon?
It might do. So there's a new Amazon Kindle out. I know we talked a little bit about Amazon last week, but they did it separately. There's a new Kindle. Kindle's been around for 10 years now.
How many times are you going to say Kindle?
I'm going to pack them in. It's been around 10 years, and their device has never been waterproof, which is something that loads of consumers want, I presume, at the beach, in the pool, bath. The press release even mentioned hot tubs, so a bit of
if you're reading when you're in the hot tub, I think you're
doing hot tubs wrong.
I also thought that. But possible. Hot water is... Okay, anyway, it's the new Amazon Kindle Oasis. So Oasis came out end of last year, and it was ridiculously expensive. £270 for the cheapest Oasis. And the way it was different was it had a better quality screen. It was really, really thin, and the design was like... almost like a grip, like you'd be holding the spine on one side and then it sort of thinned out. But the weird thing with the old one was that the battery only lasted about a week, whereas most Kindles run for 4 to 6 weeks, and they built the battery into the case. So you needed to also have a case, which you then magnetically clipped on, and it charged it up a bit more. So if you didn't use it with the case, then it would sort of run out of battery quicker.
So I'm a bit confused now. So the Oasis isn't actually a new thing.
No, this is the second generation of it. But the way this is different from the old one is that they scrapped that stupid battery case idea. It no longer needs a case to have a decent charge. But it's also bigger. Every Kindle up to now has been 6 inches, because you've got the Kindle Paperwhite and the Kindle Voyage, which are all sort of increasingly, I say, better with rabbit ears, because I think I personally think the original normal Kindle, which is £60, is actually fine. But this one is newer and bigger. It's 7-inch screen and it's fully waterproof.
So the first Oasis wasn't waterproof?
No, this is the first Kindle to
be waterproof.
How did
they call it Oasis then? I was thinking that was a really clever name, but it just... No. It wasn't at all related.
Maybe they wanted to and then they just couldn't. So they just put it out anyway.
Classic Amazon.
I've never, ever seen anyone... with a Kindle Oasis. Tons of people have Kindles in and around London where we work, but I've never seen someone with this, and it's because it was £270. This new one is better than the last generation, and it's £230.
What sort of screen is it? Is it like a iPad screen, or is
no,
it like
it's
a...
still like an e-ink display, like you get on a Paperwhite. It's just got a better quality PPI, so it's just sharper, basically.
And the 300.
300, well researched.
No, I was just guessing, because funnily enough...
Well guessed, then.
Annoyingly enough, I just reviewed the Kobo Aura 1.
You did?
Which I think has been around for, since last year. But that's £190 and is waterproof and has a larger screen, 7.8 inches. Mm-hmm. And the really annoying thing is that in that review, then I basically said, it's quite expensive, but it's waterproof, and isn't it about time Amazon got waterproof, and it's bigger, and isn't it about time Amazon had a bigger screen? And they've just done these things like a week after I wrote that. That is 300 DPI, and that's cheaper.
Yeah.
So, in a way...
Amazon still has a stranglehold on the idea of ebooks. I think if you ask the regular guy in the street, and even myself to an extent before I properly looked into it, I just assumed that Kindle was the only one you could get.
Yeah, I've never heard of whatever David just talked about.
I think
my relationship to the Apple Watch.
I'm not massively
impressed. Scott doesn't even know that Android phones are a thing, so
what's the library situation on your one?
Do you mean the public library or the sort of the bookstore? Both those things.
Because I swear Amazon have like a really... Do they have an advantage when it comes to...
Yeah, they've got millions of titles. Kobo does have a fairly good selection.
In terms of size of library, Kobo is only a little bit behind. It's like sort of 7 million to 6 million or something. Okay. They're both enormous and they both get all the new books about the same time.
Yeah.
For me, it's curation. The fact that you go on... I mean, and this is a true story that I've...
true story, everyone.
It is a true story. When I was testing it, I went on the Kobo bookstore and there was porn on the short stories.
So you gave it 5 stars.
Five thumbs up.
so to speak.
Don't know if that makes sense. Because it's just, there's some sort of really primitive algorithm that just ranks them according to whatever's selling the most or whatever's most recently uploaded. And this was just some user uploaded, very poor quality porno. And I did check on somebody else's system to make sure it wasn't my browsing habits or something. But it was legitimately there. And like, Amazon would never let that happen on like one of their major genre front pages.
Well, that's the thing, is Amazon have always been really good at giving you personalised recommendations.
Yes, exactly.
It's got a little bit cleverer this generation as well. So yes, this is a very expensive Kindle, but it's got 6 weeks of battery life without the silly case thing.
Yeah.
It is actually a beautiful piece of design. It's just very expensive.
Is it still a wedge?
It's kind of a wedge shape. Yeah, you hold one side. It's just one-handed.
So it must be super light then.
It's incredibly light, yeah. I think it's lighter than every other Kindle. But it has this new thing, which I personally don't listen to audiobooks, but it finally has Audible integration.
Yeah.
And it will, cleverly, I thought, if you have an Audible book and then you actually buy the print copy as well, well, I say print, sorry, the Kindle version, it syncs them as one, and then you can kind of pick up where you left off in the book with the Audible book, and it always syncs everything up. So I thought that was quite cool. But strangely, doesn't have a headphone jack. So if you want to actually listen to your Audible books,
that's ridiculous.
You have to use Bluetooth to your headphones or to a Bluetooth speaker.
That's ridiculous, because the time that you'd want to use it is when you're out and about.
Yeah. Nah, the headphone jack's dead though, isn't it?
Again, Amazon went with the line that Apple and HTC have used with headphone jacks, saying they needed it to keep the device slim, but it's got a wedge on it which has a micro USB port to charge it. So
that's rubbish.
It's a load of rubbish. So I think that's the weird decision, considering the audio output of it is one of its actual main selling points.
It sounds to me like the marketing of this is very much aimed at the beach poolside reader.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Yeah.
Is that how they're... sort of
pictures are, it's just that there's a press picture they use heavily of it with soap suds in the bath and beach by the pool. But I don't know. I mean, like, do people just won't take the Kindle into the sea, right? You can get a £60 Kindle and then you don't get the pages wet, right?
I think that's the key thing, is that this is too expensive. I don't think people would risk that.
The expense is clearly an issue, but someone that knows lots of people that like taking their Kindle on holiday with them. Yeah. I think the idea that you can just sort of put it down by the pool and it can get splashed or like it can fall on the floor.
It can fall in a pool for 60 minutes apparently. So
like I do think that's a genuine...
So.
Did you read that off my notes?
No, press release. Is it in your notes?
No, it's not on my notes.
Oh. And the fact that it's crazy light...
it is attractive, but then I was kind of thinking about this and the advantages you have on a Kindle because it's... doesn't strain your eyes because it doesn't have like that glaring backlight and blue light that you do from an iPad, but an iPad is only about...
Do you know what else doesn't have a glaring blue light or backlight?
are you not convinced by ebooks, Scott?
I don't use ebook readers.
But then it's only £100 less than Apple's full fat iPad. So it depends what you want. If you really are into your books and you travel loads, like Scott says, it's got something like 16 gigabytes of storage for the cheaper one. You'll never, ever fill that up, I promise you.
No.
Ebooks are tiny files. You can get a 32 gig one as well, which is even more. But if you buy one device, you can be pretty sure the Kindle's not going away because Nook's gone bust recently.
Yes.
Sony don't make e-readers anymore. So that's the only thing I would say if you're looking to buy a Kobo. Kobo may not be around. Because even if it has a big library,
any company.
I wouldn't really bet against Amazon.
But you don't bet
in
against
any
Amazon
domain,
at the moment,
to be honest.
So you could spend £300 on a Kindle or 200 and something, but you could have it for 10 years. So it depends if you want that or, you know, 30 books.
or an iPad.
Yeah, or an iPad, which does a hell of a lot more. Yeah.
Or an Apple Watch. It does make me wonder, though, given that Amazon dominates this market so much, what exactly are they aiming to do with this? They're not aiming to like knock somebody else out.
I think they're doing it because they can.
Books,
it's like their vanity. I mean, there's too many Kindles. I agree with the £60 one. And then I also agree with the Paperwhite, which is basically, it's got a slightly better screen and it's got a backlight. The Voyage is always a weird, I thought that was always a weird one. It's like £180 and it's just sort of a bit nicer than
the other
one.
I don't think you should do that. I mean, tablets are there as an option if you want that sort of thing, but a Kindle should be cheap. The whole point of it.
Yeah, I agree. It shouldn't compete with a tablet. It should just do what it says on the tin.
£60 is a great, great price for an e-reader.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be more than that.
£70 if you don't want ads on the lock screen.
Yeah, I don't know those others.
But no, this is it's a vanity thing. Amazon can afford to do it, and it will sell some, and I presume make money on them. So, yeah. Fair play.
Well, they make the money on the books, presumably. Right?
And that.
Are you an e-book reader?
I'm not. I've actually never used one.
Could this sway you?
No, definitely not.
Well, I mean, what's the thing that's
But I on? Actually do. I think that's the most interesting thing, is that it's waterproof, because I think I would be someone who would like my books when I do read get ruined because they're always outside. Yeah. So that is probably the best part about an e-reader. But
it's surprising how many reading situations involve water.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It really does. I mean, like beach, swimming pool, and bath.
Hot tub.
That's three.
All forms of
how to scuba dive.
Relaxation.
Well, that's the book.
All the bits, yeah. Got to read it when you're underwater.
No, my aversion to e-readers is purely stubborn. It's like a pure stubbornness that I like books. And I like owning lots of books.
Yeah,
you can't nice. Line your walls with a Kindle.
No. But if I did switch to an e-reader, I think the fact that it, like the design of it, the wedge design, how light it is, and the fact that it's waterproof would make that the one I would buy. Mm. I reckon of all of them.
Interesting.
Yeah,
because I've reviewed two Kindles, the Paperwhite and then the cheaper one.
Yeah,
and I still buy books.
Although actually, why don't you just buy four £60 Kindles? Yeah. And then just if they get wet, then you just throw it in the bin.
Yeah. It's almost to the point where, just get a new one.
So true.
That's so Western civilization.
Consumer.
Really? Amazon were very good, actually. I had a Kindle like several years ago, back when they still had actual QWERTY keyboards on them.
Mm.
And it broke in my bag. And just because I put too much stuff in my bag, and I just emailed them being like, what can you do? And they just sent me a new one.
Brilliant.
So it's got great customer service.
Did you put your email signature at the bottom so they knew you were a tech journalist?
This was when I was a student.
Oh, right. Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
That's fair play, actually.
That is fair play.
Oh, I like that. All right, let's go around the room. And this question was supplied by Henry Burrell.
That's very honest of you.
The question is, Kindle or Swindle? Henry?
In this instance, I think it's cool, but Swindle is too expensive.
Scott?
Yeah, lean the same way, Swindle.
Miriam?
I'll just go for Kindle. Why not?
Is that just to be
how diplomatic?
Contrary.
No, I think it sounds cool.
Well, it's still Swindle by 2 votes to 1. After a short break, we're going to come back and discuss Blade Runner. Miriam Harris, you've been at the cinema this week. What have you been watching?
The new Blade Runner.
We can't afford the music.
Maybe turn off, listener, if you don't want any spoilers.
Oh, good point. Yes, thank you, Henry. We're going to discuss Blade Runner, what's the name? 2049.
Yeah.
With potentially spoilers.
With lots of spoilers.
With lots of spoilers. Do you think it was... Have you seen the one from 1982, Mary?
Yes, but it
Is
was...
Is that when it was made?
Yep.
It was a long time ago. Like, I studied it at school, actually, so I can't remember it in detail. And I didn't rewatch it before the second one, but yes, I have seen it.
I did rewatch it.
But yeah,
last week.
They can probably fill you
yeah,
in.
Yeah, so did I. I watched the theatrical cut, which is
the voiceover.
Yeah.
So I watched the director's cut. Do you know about
and
this?
How?
Well, I do, but I'm going to pretend I don't, so that you can tell the listeners.
It's not too important for what you wanted to talk about for the new film, but the theatrical cut had a voiceover from Harrison Ford that the studio made them do. And it was it made his character a lot less ambiguous. And the ending, they like drive off into the sunset.
Yeah.
Whereas in the director's cut version and also the final cut, which are actually fairly similar, there's no voiceover, so everything is a lot more moody and ambiguous. There's a dream sequence, famously, with the unicorn, which is to suggest that Deckard may not be human. And they don't drive off into the sunset. It's a very kind of, the elevator door closes and then that's it.
And she doesn't die,
yeah,
actually, right?
That's the one I've seen.
Yeah, that's the better version.
That is the better one.
One last question about that before I go back to Miriam, who is supposed to be talking about this.
Sorry,
no. So it's fine. He says that it suggests that he might not be human. Mm-hmm. Then we see Deckard, Harrison Ford's character, again in the new film, and he's older.
True.
So that surely that just proves he's human, or have I just missed?
No, because it said in the text at the beginning that the Nexus 8 model doesn't have a limited lifespan. So the assumption is that Deckard is one of the latest models.
But in the original, they were destroying Nexus 6s.
Yeah, yes. And he was around before.
And he was all
how do you existed. Know? Because he might have had implanted memory. So that, like, in my opinion, Deckard basically didn't exist until the beginning of the movie.
Okay.
And everything else is implanted memories. This is getting really wonky.
Yeah.
And we should be talking about 2049. Ask us about the women.
Miriam, what do you think of the treatment of women? That's my English A-level style.
No, question. I mean, I think it would have been interesting for the people who have watched the first one recently to, like, compare that from the first to the second, because obviously there's kind of that infamous rape scene from the first.
Yeah.
I don't remember much more about the treatment of women from the first. Can you guys comment on?
Yeah, because to be honest, like, when I rewatched the film a week before the new one came out, I was really struck by the scene between Harrison Ford and the Rachel character.
I'd forgotten quite what it was like.
I'd forgotten about it, and it is basically a rape scene, and it's quite troubling, actually.
Yeah, my female housemate was watching it for the first time, and she was like, "Oh my god, what's happening?" It's very it's kind of horrible.
Distressing.
But then it's got two other sort of strong female characters, hasn't it? In Daryl Hannah and I can't remember the other actress who doesn't fare too well in the rest of the film. But I would say it's fairly similar, but it definitely doesn't have the same sort of like in 2049. It seems that like every female character is basically a sex worker, and there's a lot of sort of monuments of like naked women, and a lot of the imagery is sort of objectified women. I think that's probably where the issue.
And like all of them die.
Yeah,
I mean, to be fair, all of everyone dies, really.
Yes, that's true.
It's pretty much a massacre.
A lot of death.
Mm. But I was going to say the one character I can think of that doesn't fit in with that is the Robin.
Robin Wright. But also, sort of also
policewoman.
Yeah, but she dies this really dramatic,
it's horrible,
hard death, and the men really don't. Badly. Like the men's deaths aren't as visual as hers, and I'm like, why is that some weird fetish thing? Like, why is that there just for her character?
The
like,
old broken glass hand. I don't know. Fetish.
Yeah, oh,
that's very popular.
It's a lot of violence against.
Well, you remember the worst death is probably the guy that made the androids in the first film, who gets his face gradually squashed by. Yeah. Rutger Hauer, which is another fetish of mine. very much
he
not.
He is a very attractive man.
Very much not. did you think it was worse in this film than in the first film, then?
It's definitely worse. If we're to use that term, worse.
I just worse, think... Yeah. But like,
more troubling?
Yeah.
You'd think by now, like, they... More blatant. You know, this shouldn't be okay. Like, it wouldn't have been okay back then, but even so...
Yeah, this is the thing. I think in 1982... Like, obviously, I was not alive then, but I think society, culturally,
David, you're losing out.
None of us were alive in that year.
I was minus seven.
-7.
Yeah, minus eight for me. But I presume you
can.
Don't ask me. It was potentially more accepted that men sort of, you know, ruled how society in film as well as in real life, but obviously this is like a dystopian film.
Yeah, I think
yeah. So
even in the first one,
film.
He's like tender towards Rachel, and the other women characters are like fairly strong. And like Daryl Hannah is a prostitute, but she's not objectified visually. I don't think she's sleeping in like garbage and stuff. But then like in the new film, of Ryan Gosling's Joy, she's called, isn't she?
Yeah,
the little winner. He plays the William Tell theme, and she comes a running.
Making
and like she's just like there. She changes to suit his mood. And I just think that in the way that like, the giant women sort of walk around and there are all those fallen statues with just like silhouettes of breasts and stuff. I don't quite know what Villeneuve is trying to do here.
Yeah, like, what is the purpose of that? Does that need to be there?
Well, I think her narrative purpose is quite clear because she's designed by a company like Google or whatever to basically just be your doting Alexa.
Yeah.
Like,
you think it's a critique of that?
Well, yeah, because it means that it does, at the end of the day, her... And this is troubling as well, but her role in the film is character development for Kay, for Ryan Gosling's character, mm-hmm. to show how lonely he is and how basically he is so connected to something, mm. which in the end, there's a big scene, isn't there, with the big hologram where he realizes that it's only saying what he wants it to say. And it's like his development from android into sort of more something more related to a human being.
Yeah.
Yeah. I understand. I think they were trying to like critique that with Joy's character, but it was just a shame that everywhere else, like there seemed to be no justification for it. Yeah. It just seemed to be very much male gaze. Like, it's just like there was no equivalent for females. Like, none of the females had their own little holograms, like making them dinner. Like,
no.
There were no male prostitutes, no male, like naked men. Like, it was just nothing was like the equivalent. And so it was just so blindingly obviously, like, sexist, I think, such a male gaze.
And Robin Wright's Lieutenant Joshi as well, at one point, is quite clearly attracted to Ryan Gosling.
And he doesn't clock it.
He doesn't really clock it, but then there's no male equivalent for her. Where's her, like, sex robot?
I thought the idea was that he was her sex robot, that he is the object of lust of the women around him, because he's an android and he's a second-class citizen. Mm. So I actually took that to be that if she wanted to, she could demand that he have sex with her. And I think at one point he sort of avoids that by changing the subject or something. But there's sort of a slight...
He does know that he doesn't. See, it's very confusing.
Yeah, I mean, the whole film is extremely ambiguous and confusing, but in my opinion, in all the best ways, because I just love complex sci-fi movies. Yeah. And they don't really get made often, and it doesn't look like any more are really going to get made, because this has absolutely bombed at the box office.
Well, is that why it's bombed? Because it's complicated and people don't like complications?
No women have gone to watch it.
I didn't know that.
Talking poos and Lego poos.
Was it called Sausage Party, that film?
Yeah, exactly.
Emoji movie.
Just talking poos and, you know, like Lego things and superheroes and stuff. I've not seen Wonder Woman, but apparently that is a great antithesis to the gender roles.
Robin Wright also in that movie.
Yeah.
She's on a roll.
She's great. But we mentioned the test. What's it called, Scott? I forgot the name.
Yeah, is it the Bechdel test?
Yeah, I'm not sure how to
pronounce
it.
Driving test.
I should know.
I'm thinking of the name of the android test within the fiction of the movie.
Oh, no, not the Turing test, no.
No, it has a different name. It's a two-part name. It's the test that Deckard plays on the robots in the film.
It's like interlink. That one.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's in turn a different one. Oh. But the one he's running...
What's your point?
His one is all like, there's a wasp crawling up your arm. What do you do? I kill it. And it's like to find out if you're an android. Anyway, never mind. Yeah, yeah. The Bechdel test you're talking about.
Go ahead. Which I think is... it's basically a film school thing where to pass it, you need... two women on the screen during a film who have a conversation for longer than a minute that isn't about a man.
Yeah.
And Blade Runner 2049 does not pass that test.
Because the whole point of the female characters is to develop, like you say, the male characters, and they're kind of like the heroes and their needs. It's not really reciprocated, I don't think, in any way.
It's to give them a sense of angst, isn't it? The bit where she gets crushed and destroyed forever, it's not about how much she suffers at that point. She doesn't even necessarily exist. It's about how much he suffers in seeing her die.
Yeah.
I'm not defending the film here, but I just want to ask, do you think that it suffers because we're watching it through a very sort of 21st century liberal view of equal rights?
Yeah.
And because it is showing a dystopian future, it's trying to critique the treatment of women, but because we view it as so much more unacceptable than it was 35 years ago, that it therefore comes across as more sexist.
I think they just should never, if that's the defense that they have, they should have never tried that. It wouldn't work. Like, why?
That's what I'm saying. They were trying to critique it by saying, this isn't cool. Look how screwed
that
this
definitely
is.
Doesn't come across.
No,
like,
no, I'm not saying it doesn't.
I would say.
Yeah, that's the counter argument.
If that's their one argument, I think that's ridiculous.
That's fine. I think the problem is that there were no women in the room making this film. So the director of cinematography is a dude. Director's a dude. Both the writers are dudes.
Yeah.
Produced by Ridley Scott. There might have been some women in the room at some point, but in terms of who the main sort of players in getting this film made were, there weren't. So maybe that would have helped sort of sand away some of these rough edges that we're talking about.
But then I think the one moment in the film where it kind of, not redeems itself, but it's like an antithesis, is the scene where Jared Leto's character brings in the clone of Rachel that he's made.
Mm.
And you see Harrison Ford doing some actually surprisingly good acting for Harrison Ford.
He sits down most of the film.
Yeah.
He's a good actor.
He's wooden in some things.
What's he wooden in?
Blade Runner 2049.
No, but that scene where he's like showing, like, you know, emotion.
I think he's a good actor.
No, he's quite good. Anyway. But you see what, you know what I mean? He kind of phoned it in a little bit in Star Wars.
Yeah.
Star Wars?
Yeah, I came out of the film and I was like, I think actually for the entire film I liked it because I wasn't thinking, oh, it's just Han Solo. No. I was thinking like, that's Deckard. Anyway, but yeah, no, when he showed the emotion he shows and the way that... But then I suppose that woman does then get brutally shot in the head.
Yeah.
That scene is quite troubling.
That's the same woman, right, that he raped in the first movie?
Yes.
Yes.
So...
Well, it's not. It's a copy. But oh, yeah. Still.
But when she is literally surplus to his requirements, yeah. And then he's immediately...
Yeah. We haven't mentioned the really awesome female character in the movie, though. Jared Leto's, like, henchwoman.
Love, I think was her name.
Love.
Who also suffered a disgusting death.
She did.
Yeah.
But she was a bit of an arsehole. So.
But she also...
I mean, that's the classic duality, isn't it? That women are either terrifying or...
Yes.
Yeah.
Submissive.
Which is what Daryl... Yeah, which is what happens to Daryl Hannah in the first movie. She, yep.
She's the Daryl Hannah character, effectively. Yeah. Only cooler, I would think.
Oh, way better.
The way she does it is
really...
Well, she's not the Daryl Hannah character, is she? Because there is the other prostitute... Who is like part of the movie?
Yeah, I think it's interesting.
Her character doesn't get developed at all.
Have brought up
which
how...
is a massive shame because Mackenzie Davis is one of the best actresses we have. So the more screen time,
I thought that was a
shame.
I thought that was a bit of a weird one in the film.
Yeah,
she was introduced like that, and then just nothing happens with her. They bring Fraser back for a bit, and then it's a little bit like, yeah. I thought it was a very good film. It's so better than most of the other stuff I've seen at the cinema for a long time. But it was always going to be overrated, right?
The main thing I wanted to say about this film...
I know you hate
don't
that.
You dare.
Sorry, the main thing I wanted to say about this film is that, like, visually, it is about as good as it gets. But in terms of, like, good sci-fi movies, like, I watched Denis Villeneuve's Arrival last year.
That's such a good film.
And the thing is, like, Arrival is, yes, it's gorgeous, but also it's got this incredible story and loads of thematic stuff, which actually sort of comes around full circle.
And it treats women pretty great.
Yes. Whereas Blade Runner had, for me, more of the style, less of the substance, which was, that's what disappointed me in the end. Still a great movie, but the expectations obviously were hugely high.
Still go see it, everyone.
Good, yes. Give Miriam the last
your own
word.
Decision about what you think about it.
Yeah.
I think you should not see it because it's been criticised for being sexist. And racist, might I add. But anyway, that's
a whole
story.
New podcast.
Yeah, I was quite lucky because I didn't go in with all of these sort of criticisms front of my mind, and then I basically dug into them afterwards.
Yeah, that's the same stuff.
Which is a nice way to do it because then it doesn't ruin your experience of the movie.
Yeah, we didn't read any. It was impossible for me to not see lots of five stars everywhere, but I didn't read any reviews before I went.
Okay, well, I'll finally get you people to answer a question, which is, and this is the best of all, by the way, Replican or Replicant? we're going the other way. Miriam.
I don't know what they mean as replican, like it was good.
Yeah,
replicant, like an American or American, I mean, except for replicant. I thought it was really
replicant. Replicant, for sure.
You don't like it. It's got.
Replicant, I still liked it.
Nice, Henry.
I think replicant because it's made us talk about important things.
So basically, the men like it
and it
women
looks
don't.
Visually, it's that's incredible.
It's a good look.
Sorry, guys.
Excellent.
I did like it.
Yeah.
I still went like to pay it. To go and see it. Still enjoyed it.
Well, that's enough of that. Thank you. That sounded really sexist, actually. That's not enough of Miriam talking. That's enough of the Tech Weekly podcast, which is over for another week. Feel free to get in touch and let us know your thoughts and opinions, or to advertise or whatever. You can tweet us on any of these topics, hard sell, using the handle at UK Tech Podcast, or email us on editor@idg.co.uk. We will be back next week, hopefully, with more informed opinion on the hottest topics in tech. You can find us on Acast, iTunes, SoundCloud, and various other podcast sources, I think. Don't forget to subscribe, comment, tell us, tell your friends, or like us. Until then, very professional. Say goodbye, guys.
Bye.
Bye.
UK Tech Weekly Podcast.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.